It is Saturday, August 12th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today, we're talking about the Light Pick, a metronome and guitar pick built into one, with the CEO and inventor.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for GeekSpeak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, after some geek news, we're talking with Michael Herring, CEO of Santa Cruz Lightwells. He's the creator, inventor, and the company makes the Light Pick, a guitar pick that has a metronome built in. Pretty geeky, especially for musicians. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Welcome to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance, Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning.
Well, we're going to do the news today. I think we'll start with Mr. Cleveland. Sean, hi.
Good morning. So today is the 25th anniversary of the IBM PC.
Today the day, huh?
Today is the day. August 12th.
Cool show.
25 years ago, Microsoft made a deal with IBM that allowed them to put their software on IBM PCs, and overnight businesses started using it for real work. Because up to that point, computers were more like toys.
Right, right.
You know, they were more for games and for playing, but nobody took them seriously.
So what machine was this? This wasn't even the 286 then, right? It was 8086? The first, do you know, Miles?
Right, the IBM PC was... I think it was an
8086.
The processor. I've got one in my house from when I was at Cabrillo doing the electronics program. We had to use it. We're talking pared down. I got to show it to you guys sometimes. Very geeky. I guess it's core technology is 25 years old. Pretty cool.
I think it's interesting. CNN.com did a story on it, and they had to actually explain what a floppy disk was.
Oh, really?
You know, the 5 1/4 inch floppy, because no one really. I don't even know where you can find them anymore.
Oh, the big.
I haven't seen them in years,
ones?
But. Yeah, so they had to describe it's like a CD, but it's plastic and floppy,
magnetic.
Which is why it's called a floppy disk.
Okay. My dad got a machine that had 8-inch floppy drives when I was a kid.
The 8-inch? Oh, yeah,
that's
the
original.
Right.
Oh, just remember
really
that crunching noise it made when it read it?
Yeah.
I remember the first time I heard that, I thought I was eating it. Like, did I do something wrong?
Yeah, well, the original PC, a full height 360K floppy drive. 360
and that was it. No
kilobytes.
Hard drive, nothing. That's it. That's the entire OS. That's everything.
I remember the first modem I saw had to take an old style telephone. You had to,
and set it in a cradle.
Yeah, you made the call and you slammed the phone down in it. Remember?
Yeah, like in war games.
The one we had was this, there was like an oak cabinet around that you closed and closed it up. It was very cool.
My poor brother, there was my first computer in our house, there was this button that stuck out of the, it was this metal box and this big button that stuck out. And of course that button was the reset switch. So my brother set something on the table, he's all psyched to show me something, and he accidentally pushed the reset
switch. It erases everything.
I got
right?
So mad at him, he didn't really even know what he did.
I used to get PC Gamer magazine and they would put code in there. And various magazines did. Like a page or two of code
and
they would all be in BASIC.
And, oh, yeah.
Right. You could copy it line by line.
Yeah, you copy it line for line, copy the whole thing in, and then it wouldn't work. I'm
and
like,
then
oh, I'm going to have to go back.
The one character that you mistyped.
Yeah, and then I finally got it working. So, I'm like, this is great. But, of course, there's nothing to save it onto. So if you wanted to do it again, you had to retype
it
all
in. Wait a second. You guys don't read magazines that have code in it?
I don't type in verbatim anymore. So 25 years ago, computer geeks, geeks in general, started taking over the world. We finally succeeded, and I think we're in charge now, right? I mean, that's no.
Well,
is that delusional?
At least it gives us an excuse to be here today.
Wait, geeks are in charge? Where are we going, and why are we in this handbasket?
Yeah, right.
And with that, Miles, why don't you take the next story? Thanks, Sean, for that.
Yep.
I'd like to take a moment to mourn the passing of James Van Allen, the discoverer of Van Allen belts, who's a physicist for NASA for many years.
It's so convenient that he found a belt of asteroids that was named after him. I mean, that's really...
It's not asteroids.
Oh, what is it?
The Van Allen belt, I think you're thinking of the Oort cloud or the...
Yeah, yeah. So what's the belt?
The Van Allen belt is a bunch of magnetic, or a bunch of radiation caught by the Earth's magnetic field around the Earth.
Right.
A very intense band, or a series of bands of radiation, and... For a long time, or for a while, they were worried that any living creature or any astronaut that tried to pass through these bands would be killed on the way out to outer space.
Sure.
But it was also his research that was instrumental in demonstrating that that humans could get past them, and also figuring out the velocities needed to get past, to traverse these areas safely. And turns out... Dr. Van Allen was working in his office laboratory up until a month or so before he died.
Oh, wow.
And had been working as a professor until very recently.
Well, thank you very much for the for a little bit of the history of him, and of course we miss him as a geek. Thank you very much also for filling in for John Tracy, who normally does space news, and it kind of fits. Miles? Drew, please, Drew Meyer.
All right, so... Pumping power onto the grid from your basement. So there's a new company. Well, they're new. The product is new. The company's 3 years old. They're in back east in Washington, D.C., called GridPoint. And they are selling this product, which is a refrigerator-sized box with a computer in it and a bunch of batteries. And you stick this thing in the basement, and it is smart enough with the computer inside to shut off appliances as you use them during the day and store energy for use during a later time. Now, their angle is that this is a whole bunch of little teeny batteries all add up to one great big battery. If you consider that everybody has a house with a basement and they put this appliance in it, then during peak times, the utility is able to draw on this massive reserve, not have to go through brownouts and rolling blackouts, etc. So their idea is to give these to utility companies. Utilities then put them out in people's houses. People have more higher efficiency in their house because the computer controls what appliances are on during what times of the day and stores the energy that's available on the grid during the day that's not being used, then during peak times, drains the reserves out of these batteries.
When you say that these battery units control the home appliance stuff, what could a computer control that's not even being, that's not, I mean, it's not like you want the refrigerator to go off. Does it kind of control your lifestyle?
No, it's like when you're not home, if you leave a light on, then it could turn the light off for you, or it can help you remember, you know, it's 5 minutes to seven. If you wait until 5 minutes after seven, the power rates change. You can do a load of laundry for a lot less money.
Not everybody lives in California where we really watch power. It's kind of interesting. In other states, when I go to visit, people just leave lights on and appliances
so
running.
Kind of, okay, yeah, I get that.
You know, we were really concerned about that. I know I turn on the light off every time I leave a room. Most everyone I know does. But a lot of people don't, and this is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Everyone should probably have this sort of thing.
And the battery, of course, I mean, if enough people did this, it would definitely cause a situation where you wouldn't have to be rolling.
Yeah, really cool. But you know what?
Major investment.
We don't have basements here.
We don't have basements, which is interesting. And the thing is, like I said, it's as big as a refrigerator, so it's not exactly tuck it under the closet.
I have no space for that in my house.
It's interesting. If I was going to do an investment of that, I would go ahead and go with solar panels and have my own battery pack. And, I mean, it seems like that's the way to go. Interesting, though. I'd like to know if the company's successful to some degree, even in on the rollout phase.
It's interesting. There's a wave of startups entering the clean technology sector, so I think we'll see more and more of this.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
I do want to get to the interview at hand with Michael Herring about the light pick, but I'd like to do a little bit more news. Sean, please, what's going on?
I got a few short ones here. It turns out that millions of minors are illegally buying alcohol via the internet, according to DailyTech.com. They figure, based on a survey by the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America, that more than 3.1 million underage drinkers have bought alcohol online.
See, I knew the internets were dangerous.
Yeah, there's really no policing. And when these things are delivered...
Why are people selling alcohol online? I don't understand. Seems like there's a really good process.
It's commerce.
In place.
I mean,
apparently there's
a
whole new untapped market.
Yeah, it's a big untapped market.
I love those markets.
Buying wine online, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it's a way that you can get wine that's not normally available locally.
Well, I mean, you don't have to be 21 to have a credit card. So, I mean, there's no way except for to trust the person.
And who's going to check the ID? You know.
Yeah, it seems a little strange.
the deliver. I mean, they got to figure that out for sure.
RFID will take care of that soon.
That's true. Tracking. Okay, next.
Battlefield 2142 beta.
A fun game.
Is going to be available to File Planet subscribers. So I think it's free at File Planet. You might want to go sign up for their downloads. Maybe use an email address you don't really care about so much. But certainly going to be an interesting demo. So
it's a demo of a game. It's a futuristic war game.
Yeah, the year is 2142, and the dawn of a new ice age has thrown the world into a panic. The math is simple and brutal. The soil not covered by ice can only feed a fraction of the Earth's population.
Doomsday.
Yeah, we'll see.
Sounds like fun.
But, you know, have to fight your way to the food. Is that the deal?
For you gamer enthusiasts out there, you probably already know about this.
We'll have to set up a land.
For the rest of you.
Don't really care, huh?
Okay, last one, man.
You got another one, Sean?
Yeah, I do. So the CEO of Seagate Technology, Bill Watkins, last week said that they expect a big hard drive price war coming.
Really? That sounds good for us.
So they compete with Western Digital, Hitachi, Samsung, Toshiba. He said if pricing doesn't drop for us, it'll be an upside. So I can, you know, if you're looking to buy hard drives, you know, I'm hearing that there's going to be a terabyte hard drive by the end of this year.
With 750s are just around the corner.
I'm salivating.
I thought 750s were already released.
Yeah, I think they're already
released. They're available, but I don't think you can buy them yet.
they'll sell them to you. They just won't ship them.
the release versus when it gets distributed through the channel and shows up in a PC. There's a big call cycle, et cetera.
Right.
And, you know, I love Seagate drives.
Yeah.
If you're going to buy a hard drive, I personally recommend Seagate.
In fact, geekspeak.org is running on Seagate.
Yeah, I am just really impressed with the latest round of Seagate drives. They're quiet and they're fast. Although I gotta say, I tried to get that drive RMA'd that they sent, and their support needs a little help. So
I'm sure
maybe I can't give them a wholehearted thumbs up. Yeah, you know, it'll be in an article we're putting together. So check geekspeak.org.
Well, geeks, thank you very much for doing the news with us. And Sean, thanks for all those stories. Great. We're gonna have to play Battlefield pretty soon when it's actually out. Let's go now to our guest, Michael Herring. He's the CEO of Santa Cruz Lightwells, Inc., and the creator of the Light Pick. I guess about 3 years ago, you sat into... Michael, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yes, thank you.
So, Michael Herring, about 3 years ago, you sat in a music class with Ray Brown at Cabrillo College, talking about, I'm assuming, music,
yes.
Jazz. What happened that led to the Light Pick?
Well, he was sitting there telling the students about how jazz is very young comparatively to classical music, and that we've just taken all the old instruments and items and created new genres since then. And
well, it's true. I mean, music always builds off of the music. So he's saying basically that it's a very young form, but with very old instruments. How old?
He didn't say really. He just said, you know, decades or thousands of years. You know how Ray is sometimes. He calls it ancient city, probably.
Okay. And so what went through your brain?
I think I heard something different than everybody else. I just saw that it was a business opportunity, and I wanted to sit there and think about it again, and I found myself outside class thinking about it all the way home, and it was that night that all these
musical instruments are the same that have been around for hundreds of years. Maybe technology could change them to some degree.
To try and help instruments and the players. Yes.
So why do you pick the pick? Why didn't you say, well, I mean, first off, of course, instruments do change, materials change. The electric guitar has been a big change. And I'm assuming every instrument has gone through some major modifications, of course, going from a stand-up bass to an electric bass. So there is some of that going on. But its general concept led you to think that new tools could be created. So why the pick? Are you a guitar player?
Yes, a guitar player.
So what I've got in front of me right now is... you can go to geekspeak.org to see what we're talking about if you're next to a computer. If you're driving, just listen. So basically, it's a pick. It's about the size of a large guitar pick. And well, actually, it's about the size of a guitar pick, but it's thicker. It's probably, a quarter inch thick. And I should do this all in metric, but I don't. And it's got a couple screws on it that protrude from the plastic case. And you can see into it, see this computer board and LEDs and batteries. What's it? What's
going? Irreplaceable tip.
And a replaceable tip. Now, we don't have a guitar in front of us, or I'd be playing it. But how did you do all this yourself? First off, we ran into each other last week at Linda's Seabreeze Cafe,
Great place to eat.
It's a great place to eat. Yeah, we'll go ahead and give it a plug. We eat there a lot. And ran into you and started talking, and you were clearly a geek. But you founded the company, you invented the product, and
rounded up some engineers, local guys.
Yeah, so who all did this with you?
What was your role in this?
Yeah, I just sat back and said, help me, guys. I need your help. Help me create a company and a great product. And they did that. I sat down with Mark Stubbs and Darren Kim.
Okay, so who's Mark Stubbs?
Mark Stubbs is an engineer. He runs Bijiba.com, and he also works at Echelon, local guy here in Felton.
Okay.
And he was an electrical engineer?
Yes, sir.
So you knew that you wanted a pick that gave you a metronome and some beats, and as you thought about all the things you did, you kind of started creating the list of that? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, the product specifications were delivered to Mark, and he sat down and said, do you really want to do all this?
And it does do a lot.
It does.
So I don't get it. What is it?
Yeah, let's go ahead and... first off, Drew, here, I'll hand you one.
Well, that doesn't really help the rest of our listeners.
But you should be able to play with one. It's really fun to play with. So basically, it has no buttons. There's two screws that protrude from the plastic case. And as you tap it, it starts to engage you in a menu item of flashing. And you have to kind of know it. But it took me about 5 minutes earlier today. It was very confusing at first because it's doing a lot. But once you get it, you can choose it to do a metronome. And basically, there's four rows of lights. And you can do a 4/4. You can do different types of beat settings. I'm not a musician, but it basically steps you through. Why don't you set one up in a 4/4 beat so that the other geeks can see it? And basically, it flashes lights in a certain pattern, and those lights are timed to the music you're doing. And to set the interval, you're just tapping. So there's only one interface of touching these screws, and it's kind of cool. It's got this. It's got this kind of. This feeling of like more information in your hand than you normally have, which is kind of neat. Do you find that guitar players really need that metronome feedback right away, or is it a light show mostly?
Depends who you are. Mostly it's a light show, but it's the feel of the pick that we need to talk about, not just the inside working.
It feels really good.
The first left or right-handed guitar pick in history that we wanted to really give some.
Yeah, so I'm holding a right-handed. The top form gets a form to your hand.
And it's the first guitar pick that actually helps a player in playing. It absorbs most of the string shock that the tip interferes with the strings, depending on your style of playing.
You've had some surprise by musicians saying that they don't even necessarily set up all the lights and everything, but they're more just liking the feel.
Yeah, just everybody likes a different thing. Some like the light show. Some that are in bands actually like the metronome fact because it doesn't display any noise, and the rest of the band can see it while they're performing or practicing.
Let me make
everybody's
sure
different.
People that are at computers and maybe you can remember this. Go to geekspeak.org and check this out. You can link over to the site and see pictures of this device. The tip of it looks like it's replaceable.
Yes, sir.
Of course, there's batteries in it, which I'm assuming are replaceable.
Energizer batteries.
This seems to be a lot of expense. How much capital did you take into this invention?
Oh, you should see our personal credit rating. I think it's below dirt right now.
You're really stretched tight right now?
Yeah, we need to call up Bill Gates and get him to buy some stock from us or something.
Well, have you had any corporate help?
Not significant, no.
Is the product shipping?
Yes, sir, internationally.
So you can buy them in bulk or individually?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
How long did it take you to do from that initial class with Ray Brown to actually having one of these in your hand, even a prototype?
A prototype took about 12 months probably.
Wow, so you've been doing this a while. And how long ago was that? How long have you been shipping?
In the last 2 months.
It's really quite new. And are you getting any media? Besides like GeekSpeak, which of course is the most important show.
There's some stuff coming up on HGTV, and I want that Tech Toys in October. And
magazine article last week, right?
Yeah, magazine. We're in some Swedish magazine as of yesterday. A lot of stuff I can't read the language, so I'll have to get back
so you
to
you. Hope they're saying good things?
Yeah.
What about kind of viral marketing like MySpace and things of that nature?
Yeah, the MySpace, we just started 3 days ago with that, and you can go to our SCLW page there at MySpace and take a look at Joe Satriani playing Ceremony.
So what are some of the musicians that are playing it and liking it?
Who can we talk about?
Cool official sponsors here.
Yeah, you got cool. Anybody that you're like, wow, that
because
person playing.
Because we're viral, we don't have a lot yet. But we did ship our first left-handed version to Dick Dale, and we're hoping he gets back to us real
perfect
soon.
Perfect for Santa Cruz.
Yeah, perfect guy. he says he grinds the picks away, so I wanted to send it to a guy that would just be like a grinding wheel.
Yeah, right. He's the king of the surf guitar.
Yeah, you can hear his attack on the guitar. Nobody's like him.
Right.
He's his own guy.
So are you worried about the tip holding up for him? Are you giving him the whole bunch of extras?
I'm hoping it does whatever it does, and he tells me what it did.
Yeah. Okay, so what's up with the tip? Is it just molded plastic, or is there something else going on?
Well, there's a lot of design in that. You can see at the end of it, it actually allows for the tip to move up and down and slide forward and backward, absorbing string shock while you're playing with the pick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it actually moves forward and backwards.
Yeah, up and down. So if you're playing, you know, 30-second notes, if you're Al DiMeola and John McLaughlin, you can really see the pick just sitting still for a moment, as opposed to other videos or other people you've seen playing. There's some resistance involved in the right hand.
Right.
We've been so concerned about speeding up the fretboard hand, we've overlooked the strumming hand, if you will.
Interesting.
Yeah, wow.
The metronome that's in this, do you think that, professional guitar players, people that are playing music a lot, do they look at their strum hand?
Absolutely not. I would say not.
Okay, so they're looking at their fingers, right? Because they want to get as much dexterity as possible.
Or they're just thinking about spelling chords or looking 32 bars ahead like Ray
Brown. Or checking out the people in the front row that are hot.
Yeah, maybe they're just figuring out what their wife's making for dinner tonight.
Right.
They're probably another just concert. So over the whole thing, you know?
So this metronome is, in large respect, it's fun and it's show and maybe good for training. But you don't think that might not be the major selling feature for these professional artists who, of course, will hopefully tout your product, right?
You're right. I don't believe so that everyone would be, you know, focused on the metronome. In fact, I think it's, you know...
Okay, I get ideas every once in a while. I see a lot of technologies, a lot of new materials. I'm always kind of, you know, checking things out. And I have ideas that maybe would happen at some point. But I don't invest my entire life and my funding and everything and kind of be at risk financially off of a harebrained idea to some degree. How do you do that? Is that your personality type? Are you always like that risk?
I guess so. You just get driven and you realize that guitar picks have never been tracked. We don't know how many have been sold unless you're the CEO of Gibson or Yamaha. So,
you have no figures?
No, there was no figures. Tony from NAMM postulated high millions, if not billions, and don't ask me again, he said.
what's the price point, if you can say, around, you know, is it similar to...
Is this similar to other picks? What's the price range for picks, right? I mean, that's a good...
Well, you can pay $280 for a pick that's silver or gold.
Oh, really?
A little jewel box, or you could pay maybe $150 or $135 for a pick that's ground out of meteorite, which might be radioactive. I'm not sure yet.
Oh, so people have some attachment to these picks.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're asking?
Well, but how many of those are actually sold? I mean, is there enough to make a business out of it?
I wouldn't know about their market, but we do know that with our market, with a nice... light show and a replaceable tip, we were hoping that, you know, just 5% of billions would be enough for us.
Are these things about the same cost as a CD? Are they more, less?
Well, our $59.99 would be a terribly expensive CD, maybe a DVD three-pack
set. They're pricey. It's a pricey instrument that you normally, you know, pick up when you're picking up strings and just throw an extra buck on the table kind of thing. So it's definitely an investment. Are you then right now in this phase of passing these out to named players so that they actually get it? Are you, you know, much more right now still in this investment phase of you know, kind of trying to spread them around, get a feel?
Kind of in between A and B.
Yeah, yeah.
We're trying to get Joe Satriani to get one and Dweezil Zappa. And a few other artists. Basically all the artists on the MySpace page were trying to get
involved. Yeah, I saw Steve Vai.
Steve Vai came back really quick. And Paul McCartney, we're trying to get one to him. You can also try the light pick enclosure for $9.99 without the lights.
Without the inside.
To see if the string shake technology is what it is and how it feels. And it's the feel of it that you really like.
Okay, there's a little chip inside this box, and I'm going to ask you about that in just a second. But first, I just want to remind everybody, listen to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks in the air with me are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Drew Meyer. And we're speaking with Michael Herring. He's the CEO and inventor of the light pick and has a Santa Cruz company, Lightwell, Santa Cruz Lightwells. GeekSpeak is supported by Business of Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak, our phone answer and fellow web geek, and actually a friend and helper of the business at hand that we're talking about. Rick Philman awaits your calls with questions or comments about technology. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Let me just say that we are talking about music. I know nothing about music. If you're a musician, kind of interested, want to talk about it, please give us a call. If you're a geek, or if you're not and you're confused with your computer and general technology questions, we're here to help confuse and entertain. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. You can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. That's the way I do it because then we actually get to look up your question beforehand and we actually know what we're talking about. Drew, you've got a read right there, actually, if you wouldn't mind.
You bet.
Yeah, please.
Let's see here. Starting August 20th, KUSP features a new Sunday afternoon lineup. I got my head around light picks there. Lineup. At 1 p.m., listen to four hours of world music with hosts Nate Mackey, Jeff Grubb, and Gypsy Flores. At 5 p.m., Weekend All Things Considered rounds up the news for NPR. And at 6 p.m., KUSP debuts The Sound of Young America, featuring interviews and comedy with Jesse Thorne. Our new Sunday lineup appears on August 20th on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This program is supported by CruiseIO Internet, providing local, nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about CruiseIO memberships available online at CruiseIO.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the room with me, the geeks, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and Miles Elam. We're speaking with Michael Herring. He's the CEO and inventor of LightPix. Actually, the company is called Lightwells. Michael, what's up with the name Lightwells?
Yeah, people ask a lot about that, don't they?
That's not where I would go to look at LightPix.
Yeah. Well, originally had another product that just cost us too much to make, and the garage wasn't big enough.
And what's the Lightwells product that you originally thought of?
You know, it's patent pending, so we can't really talk about it.
Okay. Excellent. Superb.
So it is a mystery. I love it.
We're an intellectual property holdings company, so we have many ideas that we come out with. We make stuff that doesn't exist, and as you can tell, the light pick.
Okay, so this light pick, the clear case is cool because it's very geeky. You got a small circuit board, looks like it's, you know, traditional print. It's a surface mount component, so you've got to do that because it needs to be very small. And the top case has lenses, apertures for the LEDs. This is a very designed product. I mean, it's quite nice. The actual chip, there's only one, there's a chip in there, and it looks like a transistor in there, and a whole bunch of resistors and a cap or two. So what's up with this little, is that a computer, that little chip?
You can flash memory, yes.
So is it just flash memory? Or is it, I mean, what's the, what? How does this, how do you step through these different stages and do
now
this?
Now we're talking. Get this thing available and let me get the access to the code and we'll put it together. All kinds of patterns on it.
I'm telling you, this is a cool earring, you know. You could put it, anyway, yeah, so.
Hence the keychain. We saw some people wearing them as earrings, so we had to put that in there for them.
So seriously, what's that chip? Do you know the specs on it and what it is?
I'd say 8 SOIC pin. I'm not the engineer, so.
Okay.
I could have brought my specifications with me and downloaded all that geeky stuff, but
that's all right.
Oh, you didn't. Well, okay. That's pretty cool.
But I do program it myself in the garage. How's that?
That's great.
That's good. Does it come, you just program the board itself? It's all stuffed and everything?
We just run our own code right there off our computer and grab raw parts.
Oh, cool.
Just use ESD safe. And, yeah. Solder it together in your garage. I'm sure there's countless people in Santa Cruz soldering in their garages right now, creating new echo and stuff.
Do you own the patent on a metronome in a pick?
I believe so. It's patent pending, so we'll find out this month when it's published.
Oh, that's great. Well, good luck on that. All right, we've got some calls coming in. If you'd like to join our callers and ask us questions about technology, please feel free to get in the queue now. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. In Carmel, Michael, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
What's your question for our guest, Michael?
Well, I'm a bass player and also a guitar player, and I would have to agree with the assertion that you know, people really don't look down at their strumming hand. And I was wondering if you had explored any ideas for engaging guitar's magnetic pickup with some sort of a signal coming from the pick, so that you could have sound coming from the pick, but not have to have any external speakers or anything like that. The pick would engage the guitar's pickup
to give you an audio cue, like a normal metronome, like an audio metronome.
Right, because, you know, being a bass player that's played in a lot of industrial type music, you know, there's always things that we're doing, scraping the strings across the pickups to make all kinds of weird noises and engaging the pickups that way.
There are inducers. I mean, you can buy a hand inducer. Bass players use that sometimes instead of strumming to get that kind of, you know, continual resonance sound. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about something like that, but in the pick instead? Or are you specifically talking about like some kind of pitch that would be very clear and perfect and you'd have a metronome sound on top of your bass?
Well, it would be, you know, something that would be in the pick that...
Cool.
Held in close enough proximity to the pickup, would.
It's a cool idea.
That's
Michael,
idea,
what do you
Mike?
Think?
Yeah, we just need a few extra $100,000 from our venture capitalists that haven't arrived yet, and we're already working on the idea. Actually, we just need to get it out there.
Oh, okay. Cool. So you guys have already talked about it and have thought about it.
I think there's about 27 some odd mystery platforms of LightPix that are about to arrive in the near future.
Got a lot of ideas. Well, Michael, thank you so much for the call.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Good. Best of luck to you.
From Hollister, Lucia, welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. How do you pronounce your name?
Lucia.
Lucia, good. I guessed right. What's your question?
I hope you have enough time. It's kind of detailed. I'm getting ready to buy a new computer, and I haven't bought a computer since 1999, so really kind of, you know, out of touch with some of the new technology. But I need one that can accommodate two programs of voice recognition, you know, the Dragon Naturally Speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also do a lot of photography and now home videos, a camcorder, you know, kind of stuff. I started looking online, and then I made one phone call.
To try to pick a computer that can do all these things?
Yeah.
And that's hard.
I found something, you know, through Dell that I thought, oh, this sounds like a reasonable
thing. So what's your question for us? Is it a general, like, what computer should I buy?
Yeah,
or is it?
Yeah, and even whether I should stick with PCs, because that's what I've had all the time.
That is a big choice. I mean, whether you want to be a PC or not. I think it makes sense to go with a major, system maker.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Dell or Gateway kind of thing, because then you're getting in a situation where you kind of can see the specs at first. I got to say, though, that this is not something we can... I mean, the correct answer is what computer is right for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the one that will service your needs.
Mm-hmm.
But to go through all the details of what you specifically need mm-hmm. is difficult.
Now, didn't we have a guest or a fellow recommend a site that he's put together?
Yeah, I'm blanking on the name. It's like two shows back on our site. I just want to try to find it. We'll mention it in just a second. It kind of goes through what you want and therefore kind of a litany of what you probably want on your machine.
Uh-huh.
But basically, what you just described, it's hard not to get a computer that supports all those things at this point. If you're editing video, you definitely want to make sure it has a FireWire port. That's normally an option. It's not on all computers. FireWire port. And that has to do with digital cameras use FireWire to communicate with the computer, and that's how you encode the video. But other than that, it's kind of a... Most of the stuff will have it, and it's kind of a good luck. If you want to get some really good advice, and you know that it's a big investment stuff, you could go ahead and have someone do an assessment of you and pick out a computer for you.
There we go. You can also visit this website, comprec.com, C-O-M-P-R-E-C, like I'm assuming it's short for computer recommendations. Comprec.com, and that will walk you through a couple of really simple questions that will help narrow down the options that you would be interested in looking for.
Oh, okay.
Additionally, if you're a geek, listen to this, and you do this kind of work of like assessing and helping people buy computers, and you're in the Central Coast and here on the show, please give us an email. Go to geekspeak.org and let the geeks know. We'll post your name on the show today, and maybe Lucio, you'll get lucky and somebody will be able to help you out directly.
Okay.
Thank you so much, and good luck. I hope you make a wise investment. I know it's extremely hard to understand all the technologies behind it. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
You can call in with questions and comments about technology. We're taking your calls about anything. You can, of course, talk about our show, which is about the LightPix, designed. The CEO and inventor is here, Michael Herring, to answer questions. But we'll take any calls. And here we go to Santa Cruz. Randall, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, how are you doing?
Quite well. What's your question today?
Well, first of all, I tuned in a little bit late, and I'm not exactly clear on what the light pick is. Is it a guitar or instrument pick that has a metronome?
It's a large guitar or pick, and
it's not large. It's the size of a pick. It's just a little thicker,
a little heavier duty. Yeah,
it's like a quarter inch thick. It's a plastic case that's transparent. You see a circuit board inside. There are two probes that stick out. They're actually screw heads. And as you touch the probes, you go through a menu interface with lights that flash.
There are four LEDs on either side of the pick, and they blink in different
patterns
depending on the beat that you set.
And the taillight lets you know that I've received the program. And
right. And basically, when you set it up correctly, you can get a good 4/4 beat at the rate you want, and you know it's basically a kind of detailed metronome that is in the pick.
Gotcha. Is the tempo set via a control, or does it have a tap tempo?
It's tap tempo.
Tap tempo, yeah.
Gotcha.
And you know what? If you already play guitar and you play on stage, this thing would look really cool in your hand.
Yeah, it brights up. It's cool.
Especially the blue one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the one that has multicolors. I like that one a lot. Okay, so do you have another specific question?
My other question is this related to the Light Snake? I know it's another guitar accessory I've seen recently.
Nope, no relation.
The same people.
No.
Okay.
This company is a Santa Cruz company, and they started shipping about 2 months ago. So
gotcha.
I don't know what the Light Snake is.
I'm looking at it here. It's a USB cable on one end and a telephone plug on the other, and it's got a little bit of an LED in the socket so that it flashes and blinks as it transfers data.
What does it do?
Lights up and it's cool.
Okay. I like lighting up and cool.
What it does, I think it just lets you record your guitar directly, basically.
Right. Well, Randall, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. It sounds like a good product. Appreciate it.
All right. You can go to geekspeak.org if you want to see links over to the site and see some pictures of it. And, Sean, you want to ask this question from Stuart?
Oh, yeah. So Stuart from Santa Cruz, a local jazz artist, wants to know if, Michael, have you thought about percussion applications? Maybe a drumstick with a metronome attached or a drum head?
You know, I get that question a lot. We're just so busy focusing on one platform. Like I said, we're back to the venture capital question.
Can't the drummers keep beat, though? I mean, isn't it the guitarists that need the help?
Yeah. I think everybody wants some cool lights is what we're talking about. I need some lights, too, please.
You could tape this thing to a drumstick, definitely.
Yeah. Pretty soon we'll have fiddle bows and...
Yeah. What a great idea.
With the fiddle, you'd have to have some kind of leveling thing so you could actually, depending on how you angle it...
It doesn't matter, as long as it lights up.
Who cares about it?
It has to feel good to be accepted by the performers.
Maybe the lights, actually, depending on the sound that it makes...
Change frequency, change color.
Change the color of lights.
We all like LEDs, don't we?
Well, what is this show called again?
A Geek Speak. And you're listening to it on KOSP. If you'd like to call in with questions and comments about technology, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. From Capitola, Barry, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Quite well, and yourself?
Pretty good.
Are you enjoying the show?
I love this show.
Good. What's your question?
Do you like lights, Barry?
Yeah, lights is what I'm all about, actually. I'm a photographer, so I'm...
That's true. What's your question?
My question is, I'm wanting to back up my computer. I've never gotten an external hard drive before. I filled it up, so I'm going to need to get more memory and update and all that. So.
You want to upgrade your current computer and also make sure that you're backed up?
That's correct. So I've been starting to copy stuff onto disks and whatnot, so I'm ready to purchase an external drive, and I wanted to know what kind of features should I look for. I'm starting to see, you know, what size and...
Are you using a Mac or PC?
A Mac G4.
I would get a USB 2 supported external hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And
not FireWire allowed?
No, USB is cheaper, and also it's more universal. You know,
And you can get drives with both.
Right, but there's no reason really to get a FireWire drive specifically. I mean, I don't think. I've got a Seagate enclosure right now that's got a USB and FireWire, and the only time I use the FireWire is because I can't find a USB cable. Right, it's not a choice because it's better or anything. I kind of like the idea, like you encode video and such on FireWire, and I kind of like the idea that the encoding of video is all done on FireWire, and my drives are actually accessed through USB. But in any case, with USB 2, it's just as fast as FireWire. So you want to get an enclosure? Yeah. Do we have any recommendations?
Is this drive going to sit on your desk, or is it something you want to carry with you?
No, I think it's going to be desk.
Good.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
We don't like the idea of carrying.
Getting a larger drive in a larger enclosure is not that might be the way to go. Those have external power bricks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're makes it kind of, bulky to take with you. And really, if you're backing up data, you really don't want to move the drive anyway.
Right. So, I'm just for the type of work I do, a lot of photographs.
Yeah, you got to back up your stuff. Are you shooting digitally?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't have a backup solution right now?
Not yet.
Do this before you go to sleep today.
I'm doing it as we...
Yeah, okay.
So how important is this data?
It's his photography. It's his life.
So, right? I'm not sure I would just get a single hard drive then. You might want to get some sort of attached network device that has multiple hard drives. That way, if one of the drives goes bad, you still have access to your data.
We're talking about some serious expense, though. What's the bottom market right now?
I played with the Infront ReadyNAS network attached storage device, and those aren't that – they're not really that bad.
Still about $1,000.
Yeah, but that's a full NAS
Well, that's
device,
for a, you know, a terabyte. You don't have to get them that large.
Well, are there like USB attached, RAIDs where there's two drives in the box? Is that product exist?
Yeah,
Drew, do you know
that's
that?
Good,
you know
it's a good point, Miles.
You can buy a thing from Promise, and I think Linksys has one that may not be shipping anymore, but it's out there on the web that you can buy just an empty chassis and stick your own drives in.
Uh-huh.
And of course, us storage snobs look down our noses at that because you never know how can you possibly predict what drive someone's going to stick in there, and then how do you deal with the support challenges that arise from that?
Yeah. Right, so
this is your data. So, you know, it depends how risk averse you are versus cost conscious.
Sure. Miles?
Right. But honestly, I mean, we're talking about a full NAS device the caller was talking about just backup. Yeah. So why not just get a simple USB single drive in there? Because you're making
as long as you keep the data on your you have data in two places.
Right. So that's the important thing. If you're
and
running
those
out
are
of
really cheap,
yeah,
and
super cheap. You can buy a USB enclosure for $100 or less.
Oh no, closer to like 30.
With no drive in it?
Yeah, 30 or 40. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. What we're talking about really is, Barry, what we're talking about is that when you put data on a hard drive, it's a temporary medium. People think of it as a permanent medium, but all hard drives fail. It's just a matter of time. So if you take your photographs, for example, move them off your G4, just to store them somewhere else, you don't have a backup anymore if you've erased them for the first. If you keep a copy on your digital computer and move them on to the other, then it's a backup. So you really have to be conscious about your failure point and how that handles it.
And it's sometimes it's nice to use the software that comes with the drive.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Like Maxtor and Seagate, their external drives have these one-touch backups. You push a button and it automatically syncs the two.
Isn't Maxtor owned by Seagate now?
Which?
Yes, I guess they are. So multiple drive manufacturers have this technology. I don't know if I would go buy an enclosure and then buy a hard drive and do it yourself, because a lot of hard drives run hot, and the enclosure, you don't know how much, you know, what that will do to the drive. Whereas when you buy the complete unit from a company, the hard drive is rated to work in that box. They've done the testing. You don't have to worry about that.
Right. But a word of warning, when you're getting a drive that has that backup, that one-touch backup, you have a Mac. Make sure it's compatible with a Mac, because most of them are Windows-only software.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I agree. So
I called the guys over at MC Square, and they recommended they sell the Lacy. And I noticed two different ones. There's the D2 hard drive with triple interface. And then
I've had some problems with Lacy, actually.
Lacy.
Lacy's one of the biggest and best FireWire drive names for Macs, too.
Yeah. Lacy's, you know, I've actually, they're kind of pricey, but they bill themselves as being a more high-end solution.
Yeah. And does this thing have a drive inside it? This Lacy that they're suggesting?
Yeah.
You know, I had a faculty member come and say, this drive's not accessible anymore, and I felt it. It felt like the FireWire connector was loose, so I popped it open, and the connector wasn't soldered well onto the board, and it was Lacy, and it still kind of sticks to my memory. You know, it's like, that's not good. But then again, that was just a one-time thing, and everybody has failures in their production line. That's just a matter, you know, that just happens.
Right.
So I personally have some Seagate drives. Seagate gave some to us to feature and look at. We have an article up if you want to take a look at it. But I like the drive. I think it's a good choice. I do like the idea of having a drive that has good Mac support if you want the one-touch feature, which is cool, and Lacy does that very well. I'm not sure if Seagate does. So, Barry, thank you so much for the call. Good luck on your purchase.
Sure, appreciate it.
You're welcome to call us with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, 1-800-655-5877. We don't currently have any callers online, so call in, please. But let's go back to talking about the light pick. So the thing that I'm curious about, this Energizer deal that you kind of mentioned a little minute ago, they're giving you batteries. Why are they doing that? How do you get that hookup?
Oh, I just called them one day and said, I need some help. And they donated some batteries for Dick Dale and Steve Vai and Dweezil Zappa and all the engineers, so we could actually test these components. And before we launched the product, we needed to know how long it would last.
How long does it last?
You know, it depends on who's using it. We found
how so? To the beat rates? Or
it depends what's being displayed. If you're in blink mode, it uses less power than metronome mode, you know, all that geeky stuff. So it could last anywhere from 4 to 24 hours.
Oh, okay.
Depending on...
Definitely a concert length, though.
Yeah, definitely. It had to at least last one show. Yeah.
Now, when you're in hold mode, there's no charge going across the screws, right?
That's correct.
So you're not really using any extra, you know, battery there.
No, unless you're touching it and playing it. You're in hold mode, then it's actually performing, so...
It keeps performing.
Yeah, it doesn't turn off and go to sleep until you set it down.
Oh, okay.
While you're in hold mode.
But so have you run them out? Yeah, anyone?
Oh, numerous times, yeah. But they're all different depending on what color lights. You know, you got different color wavelengths, blue over white, over red, and yellow, of course.
And what about a chargeable?
So what happens when the battery wears out, what happens?
Just buy more watch batteries at this point.
So you can open it up and replace the battery?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So are we going to see a rechargeable one?
In the near future, yeah.
That's the little socket you drop it into, yeah.
You gotta get one of these with a USB interface. You can program anything you want. You know, for me, I don't need the pick on it. I just want a little dongle that does that. That's cool.
You'll love our Bluetooth applications that are coming up.
Oh, yeah. I was just going
to
say,
that's the way to go. Wireless.
You know, like I said, we're back to the back in the garage development R&D phase.
Yeah, that's cool.
Launch one product, get that one out.
Hey, so before the show, Rick Philman, who's here every week answering calls, you guys are like, hey, Rick, hey, Michael, how's it going? So what? Rick helped you out, you know him?
Yeah, I actually met him through Johnny Gooms from the Santa Cruz Sentinel that did an article about us, and he came over to the house and spent a couple hours. Great guy. Gave us
helping the website out.
Helping with website and questions. And
yeah, Rick's wonderful.
All that stuff that I didn't know about.
All right, we're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You're welcome to ask us a question about the light pick. Again, 476-2800, 1-800-655-KUSP. Leaf from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Leaf. What's your question?
Got a question about DVD Rs and DVD Plus Rs.
Okay, what's the question?
I just heard that you may not be able to run... I didn't even know there was a DVD Plus R, but I've heard that if you run them... If you try to burn something onto the wrong one, you could even mess up your drive. Is there truth to the rumor?
I don't think the drive's in danger. Sean, what do you think?
I don't see how it could be.
But the disk won't work.
Yeah.
Make a coaster instead.
Plus R is better for backing up computer data. Because of the way that the data is written to the disk. But Plus R is not compatible with a lot of, you know, consumer-grade DVD players, stuff that you would have hooked to your television set.
Right.
So in that regard, you'd need to burn a dash R to have that compatibility in DVD players.
And personally, I just buy DVD dash R media. Somebody gave me some Plus R recently, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to have that and then and burn with it the wrong way, and it's just going to be confusing. So just stay with Dash R.
I pretty much stay with Dash R too.
It's a little bit older, a little more compatible.
The way I'd go with the reason I'd be using Plus R is if I was using a DVD to do backup data and that was my workflow process and I wanted to have good backups, I would definitely switch over to Process in that situation, but it'd be dedicated to that.
Right. Is there any benefit to Plus R? What is the difference?
It has to do with
it's the age and the standardization. So Philips and Sony developed the DVD Plus and came out after
But not much after.
And Pioneer developed the DVD Dash, and it's also backed by the DVD Forum. So it's just a little bit older, more standardized, has broader compatibility.
And you know what it is, Leaf, is it's a patent ownership and rights. So it's a war to some degree. But as Sean was saying about the Plus R, its format of writing is a more reliable format for data storage, would you say?
That's what I hear.
Yeah, what I hear too.
And it's a different writing method. I think Plus R might actually be a faster write.
Leaf, as a musician, you got to go up to geekspeak.org and take a look at this light pick. It's pretty cool. Thanks for the call.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, Brad from Carmel, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I need to purchase a home computer, either laptop or desktop.
Mac or PC?
PC.
Okay.
To do work at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to purchase a high-quality imaging unit so that I work with images.
Are you sure you want to get a laptop?
I'm sorry?
Are you sure you want to get a laptop?
Oh, yeah. Laptops. Pretty much you can replace a desktop with a laptop these days.
Well, here's the issue. I'm concerned about spending $3,000 on a high-end computer so I can do high-end imaging work. And then in 6 months from now, when Vista comes out, finding that I can't upgrade or take advantage of all that Vista offers.
Vista's going to come out in 6 months? Cool.
So how, are you making a living with this right now? Or is this a hobby?
I make a living. I work at... I do most of my work at my office. I'd like to be able to take some of it home.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wait, there's no financial penalty. But if you jump into the pool, you can start making some more money? Does it matter?
If I wait, there's no financial penalty. It's just...
don't wait.
There's lifestyle penalty.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Sean, okay, what's your advice?
I'm going to jump in, but just keep in mind I work at NVIDIA. So I don't really know...
chips, don't you?
Yeah, well, I don't really know the mobile product offerings from, you know, ATI, which is a competitor. What I can tell you is do not buy a notebook with an integrated graphics chipset. So integrated is going to share your system memory, and it's going to be slower. For imaging work, you do not want to do that. And you will not be able to take advantage of the 3D aspects of Vista. So what you really need to do is make sure you buy a notebook with a graphics chip. you know, with a discrete, it's called discrete graphics chip. Any of the NVIDIA Go, the new Go 7, have what's called the GeForce 7, generation of graphics chips. Any of those will be run, they'll run Vista just fine.
Can I add a video card like in a PCMCIA slot, Sean?
You know, there are, Alienware has, I forget what it's called, it's a specific name for the technology where you can actually pop off the bottom of the computer, you can replace the graphics. But you know, geez, a GeForce 7 based chip is going to give you all the performance you need. You can game on that. Mm. Geez, if you really wanted to, you could buy what's called SLI with multiple graphics chips.
On a laptop?
In a laptop,
oh,
yes.
Oh, don't do that, though. I mean, that's just going to be more expensive. How much are we talking?
What's SLI? So SLI is a technology from NVIDIA that allows you to run two graphics chips at the same time. So, you know, it depends. Do you want to carry this thing? Do you want a portable battery? I mean, you can have a full notebook with desktop power, you know, power of a desktop.
But it gets heavier and heavier.
But
right?
The battery's only going to last an hour, and right. You got to keep it plugged in. So you got to make that call. But notebooks can certainly run Vista. You just don't get an integrated graphics chip.
Do you think that $3,000 is the right price point for a good laptop? Or is
that
kind of high?
Yeah, that's going to be a cherry notebook.
That's
going
to be
a
nice
notebook.
Really nice computer.
Yeah.
That's my issue is I don't want to put out that type of money and make an investment like that and then have it be obsolete.
It won't be obsolete.
You know what? If just send a couple of links to notebooks you found to geeks at geekspeak.org, and I'll tell you if they could run Vista or not.
I'll give you a thumbs up
and tell you what I think.
Are we seeing Vista Ready logos on things yet?
Vista Ready.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Vista Ready. You'll see that. I had this computer for years. It had 98, you know, Windows 98 Ready. You know, older. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Well, you're listening to GeekSpeak. And I believe, we're towards the end of the show. GeekSpeak is supported by Business Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online, businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Today, we've been speaking with Michael Herring. He's the CEO of Santa Cruz Light Wells, which is a mystery product that hasn't been released yet, patents pending, all that stuff. But they also created the Light Pick, which is a guitar pick that has a metronome in it and looks really cool. And you can learn more about the products and all that at geekspeak.org. And of course, you can send us questions and comments about technology on geekspeak.org and look at pictures of us. Hey, Miles is single, so you know you got to visit.
And our news stories and the calls that have come up are up on the website now.
Thank you very much.
At least go to the site and check out a picture of the light pick. It's really cool.
Definitely.
If you're a guitarist, you definitely want to check it out.
our phone answerer and fellow web geek, Rick Philman, thank you so much for being here every week with us on GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning were Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, and Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. Our guest, Michael Herring, thank you very much all for joining me on GeekSpeak today.
Thank you.
And to those that called in, thank you so much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission for KUSP and GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell.